Chapter 23. Fathers and Sons. Sleepy, but full of energy again, Chenra left the bathing vessel after waking up. He remembered that Esmera and he had some kind of sex, but could not explain exactly what had taken place, nor how it had happened. Had she cast a spell on him? How could it happen that he of all people? Not knowing how the people here would react to a homosexual dog god, whether this might change the timeline permanently, he kept his preferences to himself. He thought back to the event, yes, he actually had sex with a Gajan woman, the first ever with a female being. He was inwardly frightened, by the gods. Had he climaxed? In her? Oh no. Please tell me that's not true. I don't think Elioni will like this, he thought to himself, noting that modern clothing and his protector had been cleaned and placed next to the tub. He believed that there could be no descendants from connections between Anthros and Gajans, because they were genetically very different. Nor had there been a single known case on Alpha Vol in which there had been a birth from such a constellation. So Gajes felt a sense of security, but still had to talk to Elioni about the events. Although the latter expressly demanded of his wife that she should groom the male dog, wasn't that going a bit too far? Ah, Chenra. Eat something, he joyfully shouted when the Anthro entered the neighboring room. He sat down and thought about how to start the conversation. The human beat him to it, however, I heard that my gift pleased you very much, friend. And Esmera must have liked it, too. Embarrassed, the sheepdog looked on and said nothing, whereupon the Tamrian only laughed and told him that he was very pleased. To be honest, I don't remember everything. I think I was just too tired from the long journey. I just fell asleep at some point. So did your wife tell you everything? Yes, and it's fine. She didn't go into detail, but I don't need to know more about it. I'm proud that you didn't spurn my gift. I thank you for it. Not every man is granted to be able to say that one of his wives has lain united with one of your kind. What kind of a way was that to share his women, and then with someone of a different species? And from the point of view of the women, was this really what they wanted? After a short silence, the dog remembered that Joliad and Amarok were both Anthros, but they belonged to different species. On top of that, they were also homosexuals, which didn't cause a stir on Alpha Vol, as it certainly would in this country, but wasn't the norm either. Besides, he himself had had a preference for males and sex with Amarok, a wolf. Humans had very strange, sometimes deviant moral concepts and through conventions, principles and their pride overboard, if they expected an advantage from it. Gajes knew these ideas very well and knew that they applied to all earthlings without exception, no matter what time. There was an advantage to be gained from any situation, to improve one's position, to gain new experiences. Wasn't that natural behavior? In his homeland, he realized, it wasn't much different, whether you loved someone or just wanted to have fun with them, one lived out one's preferences in such a way that one could fulfill one's dreams and desires, as far as possible, without the pressure of expectation or fulfillment. Expectation, that often meant disappointment, the end of a deception that one had imposed on oneself. I knew it, though, the man continued. What do you mean? Again Elioni smiled mischievously, I knew you couldn't resist the temptation to sleep with my beautiful Esmera. Though Chenra still looked embarrassed, he then gathered his courage and spoke, I am Kisar. I succumb to no temptation, but accept the offers of my fate. Wow, that was a good one. Almost sexy, I exclaimed as I read, picturing him mustering courage, regaining aplomb, and manfully uttering that line. I had created him as he presented himself, masculine, tough, unyielding. Although my statement about his saying seemed like self-praise to me, I quickly realized that this was quite justified at this text passage. After all, his saying was not one I would ever have said, but instead Chenra, the stronger of the two of us. I continued reading, I have to thank you, my friend. Thank you for the time and the experience with your wife, who is very beautiful, I must admit. The evening led to the promised relief and I feel better. The Gajan was pleased and Chenra decided to chalk up what had happened as an experience he had nothing to be ashamed of. After all, everything had happened by mutual agreement and was now history. Men and women always ate at separate places here, which seemed unusual to the dog. He adapted to the circumstances and did not want to ask unnecessary questions. The highest of his directives was not to interfere in other matters, as long as this did not serve his mission. In Alsatianaya, several generations always sat at the same table and ate together. This strengthened the bond of the family and was also more fun. "Didn't you say you had children, Elioni?" the male asked curiously. The man stopped eating and explained that his children always left home early and worked as cleaners in several temples. Children's work, this was another point that the sheepdog could not understand. Children should simply be children and be able to grow up with fun and games. However, these were only his ideal ideas. He also left this idea alone, so as not to get into unnecessary discussions. Moreover, it was not up to him to decide how one had to live correctly here, on another planet and in another culture. After they had eaten, the four veiled women covered the tables and went to wash the dishes they had used. Arabic-speaking whispering and giggling were perceptible. It seemed to the sovereign that the host's wives were talking about what Esmera and he had experienced together. "The cackling is the same, in all cultures, I think," he summed up in thought. "Tell me, dog god, what brings you to the Black Land, to the north of Tamari? You have not yet told me why you have traveled here," spoke the bearded, gaunt Gajan and had two goblets and a jug of water brought to him by an Arabic command, which he addressed to his wives. The Alsatian politely thanked him for the service and then explained, "I'll be honest with you. I'm afraid I can't tell you where I came from, because I would cause a stir. However, I must ask you to trust me and help me find my way around here. I'm not from here and I've never been to Egy. Tamari. I was planning to visit your country to gain new experiences and impressions. You see, I am a scribe, and at the end of each trip I write down what moved me." "A writing god, then? How unusual. I always thought beings like you had things written down by subordinates and didn't do the work yourself." Not wanting his card house of lies to collapse, Chenra told him that he simply enjoyed finding words for the inexplicable and beautiful. Elioni thought about it briefly, plucked at his beard and then spoke, "Very well, dog god. I do not presume to know your motives, but it would be a pleasure for me to guide you and show you our beautiful land. Whatever you are looking for, I will help you find. It is my honor to assist you in whatever you wish to accomplish." "Thank you," the male smiled and bowed his head. The man followed suit and asked about the first stop on his guest's journey. But Gajes had to ask himself the same question: where should he start looking, and what was he actually looking for? If the Ispaseka had brought him here, to this place and time, then the origin of all Anthros and his timeline had to be here. But that, he thought, could not be, because after all, the inhabitants of the land seemed to have known anthropomorphic beings for a long time, even if they probably did not seem to be very numerous. It was striking that he had not seen another one so far. "Well," began the Alsatian, "since this is my first time in your country, why don't you tell me some of its history?" Again Elioni nodded and told Chenra to follow him to the Temple of Yenebayan, which was not far from the marketplace. Again, he gave a command to his women, to which they all responded with a curtsy. Chenra, not knowing what the master of the house had told them, turned once more as he left the dwelling, glancing in Esmera's direction, but she turned around and walked away. "What the dog did not see, but I read, took my breath away. I could not believe it when I learned that the Egyptian, standing in the next room, gently patted her stomach. A gesture that I understood all too well and that instantly gave me an internal emotional blow. Again I opened my eyes, my mouth as well, when I realized that the origin of my creation was revealed to me directly. It took only this small gesture for me to understand that Esmera had been impregnated by Chenra, an Anthro. This meant that a being from the future, one of my sons, would make a human woman his mother, who would thus be a very distant ancestor of mine. The origin, which I now recognized, was that of myself. Since Chenra was my creation, it was a paradox which was inexplicable. No, it was impossible. This can't be," I said aloud, tears in my eyes. How can you be my ancestor when I made you?" Without suspecting it at that moment, my son, this brave shepherd, had enlightened his own father about its origin, which was established by himself. "Absolutely impossible," I then whispered and took it upon myself to let my protagonist go on his way for the time being, without any interference. I was very excited to see what he would experience, find out, feel and bring to light. Besides, I always wanted to travel to Egypt and Chenra was now my eyes and ears here. It was still not clear to me what his actual mission was and whether it would become necessary to stop him. However, the knowledge he brought me in the process could prove valuable. Meanwhile, I no longer regretted my decision to let him go alone. I would have followed a path that would have enlightened me far less than his did. So the men sat down on Samarana and rode through the blazing sun. Gajes held his hand protectively over his head, for the life-giving fireball, known here as the disk of a god, could be as merciless as it was helpful. "Damn hot here," he groaned, but Elione just laughed and said that the dog god would survive, since it wasn't far to the temple and there was an underground water source. "Yes, dog god, I can tell it must be colder where you come from. I sometimes wonder how the other gods stand it here, with all that fur, scales or feathers. Others?" asked Gajes. "Have you met many other gods?" The earthling, however, searched for a suitable answer and pressed around, "Yes, you know, there are already a few. I've seen one or the other before, but none of them has spoken to me yet. Unfortunately, you don't run into them very often anymore. In former times, as the oldest among the villagers tell it, it should have been completely different. Why this is so, I will be able to show you in the temple, even if that should probably not please you. But more about that in a moment." After a short ride, the travelers reached the temple of Yenebeyan, which was dedicated to the jackal god that the Egyptians called differently. "Anpo," spoke Elione joyfully, gesturing upward with a hand gesture to the roof-edge ornamentation of the structure, which displayed the filigree mask of the canine. "Anpo?" the dog asked, saying his friend probably meant Yanapo or Anubis. The human waved it off, "I don't care what you call him, or that the Greeks call him Anubis. My people call him by his real name." Chenra sighed, "Whatever. Let's go inside. It's too warm in here for me. I'm sure we won't get fried like this inside." "Then get rid of your armor and let some air into your fur, dog god. Then many things should be easier for you," the human spoke as they got off the camel. "Take off the protector?" The Alsatian had no intention of doing that and shook his head. "I think," he spoke explanatorily, "I'd rather leave this on. Believe it or not, it actually cools me down a bit." He ran ahead into the temple, which offered ample shade. When he looked around, the dog recognized the artistically designed hieroglyphics in different colors on the walls. Astonished, he studied those signs, which he knew from history books of the present time. On photographs they had faded in the meantime, but here, not long after they had been carved into the chalky stone, they seemed even more imposing, mystical and beautiful. To see them with his own eyes, to be allowed to touch them, he could never have imagined. "Well, Chenra Gajes," laughed the Tamrian, "can you read it and see the story behind it? You don't seem to speak Tamrian. What kind of tongue do you speak back home?" The male sighed and shook his head, "My mother tongue is called Alsatiani. A long story. I wonder if I can read or interpret these signs? No, I must admit, I can't. But they are beautiful. Beauty alone, dear Chenra, is not enough. Something written may or may not please your eye. What matters is what the characters tell you, not how they do it. I will translate them to you as understandably as I can." The sheepdog had in mind for a brief moment a scene from my book, in which Amarok in the hospital opened his eyes and called out the name of Vulpes Lupus Canis. This flash of thought was, not coincidentally, replaced by another one that revolved around the books in Bolmer's leader's bunker. Carteron had also studied the signs in order to get closer to the origin of his race. "So you're telling a story from ancient times?" "I see," he nodded. "What story is that?" His guide took a burning torch from the wall and held it a little higher than his head was so that he could illuminate the first hieroglyphs, painted in different colors. For Gajes, these were small pictograms, males, suns, lines and arrows. Although they were very detailed, carefully chiseled and written down, a meaning was not apparent to him. "It is the story of the great resettlement of the animal gods, Chenra, the human man began. The signs tell of the building of the great pyramids and the desire of the ancestors to go to the stars." The male dog now looked thoughtful. "Oh," he opined, "you mean the Anthro's journey into the universe." "Universe? Anthro's? What do these words mean? Do they come from your language?" Gajes had to stop himself. It came back to him that so many years ago they certainly didn't say Anthro's and a simple man couldn't know what the universe was. In this country, the earth was still perceived as a disk. He waved off and asked the narrator to continue, after which he slowly passed the torch close to the wall, reciting the story that was here to be read. The worship of gods like you is as old as man himself. Yours have always existed, longer than believers. And since time immemorial, the deities have lived side by side with us. We do not know when or how they once came to us, but it says here that they inhabited this world even before we did. They stayed because they became curious about who humans would become. Their curiosity tugged at them, so they decided to build airships to find a way to the far reaches, to new worlds. However, these experiments failed. The man pointed to a symbol, which showed many points and a kind of flying body, whose silhouette reminded the male of a UFO from children's books. Apparently, centuries before the present time, mysterious things had already been observed in the sky, for which there was no explanation. At the beginning of time, they were found in every corner of our world. Here, in Tamari, after many hundreds of years, the remaining gods finally settled down to continue traveling and exploring our world. There is always sunshine here, and many places in the world are easily accessible by ship. They could not have chosen a more beautiful place to reside, and I am proud to share it with them. The sign of a ship or boat was visible, on which a simple representation of a feline anthro seemed to sit. The god beings can become very old, but they are no longer able to produce offspring among themselves, because there is only one of each kind left. Of course, it is not possible for Anubis and Bast, for example, to have children together. No offspring? So it doesn't look very good for them. But what good will a rescue to another world do? There, too, they will be alone, noted the Alsatian, thinking of what Rado Pertoriza, Joliad's teacher, said at the time. Aramaria had also considered populating other planets, but was concerned that they would not have the ability to reproduce there. History repeated itself thus actually. That, my friend, is not what it says here. They want to go to other worlds, but how they want to do it and what they intend to do then is not described. He illuminated a sign that showed a cluster of humanoids, with some of them lying on their sides, which was supposed to represent their death. Dogs, like you, are credited with death, the afterlife, but also creation and culture. Canines have always been responsible for helping us humans find our way through the underworld, the Duat, to the afterlife. That's why many of us surround ourselves with them, and likewise, I was so proud to have found you, Chenra. Not only are you the first god I've been able to experience up close, you're also a dog. Dogs bring good luck and mean long life. I understand, Elioni, grinned the Alsatian. The man now shone his light on a slightly larger sign, which was much more colorful, more detailed than the others, the head of a dog-like creature. You certainly know him, that, my friend, is Anpo. Since he is the supreme of all dog gods, you will surely meet him one day. Yes, he got confirmation, he and I have even met each other. Chenra remembered the situation in the hospital in which he negotiated with the god of the underworld about my life. Anubis was very powerful, because he was able to take dying people to the underworld after taking their energy of life. He gave the impression of being malicious and arrogant to the Alsatian, which the latter noted that the jackal showed no compassion for the architect and spared him only after he received a supposedly better offer in exchange. I think he's in a bad mood, though. He may be a busy god, but he's really acting impossible. He should find another job, if you ask me. After all, someone who has a lot to do with death and suffering can't be happy at all. Maybe he needs some time off. The human chuckled softly and confirmed, not many have had the pleasure of meeting him and living on afterwards. Strictly speaking, no one. After all, the Lord of Duat knows many tasks, but all of them have to do with death. Elioni took down the flaming wooden staff a little and continued to report as he lit the symbol of three pyramids. Whenever Apep, the serpent of night and chaos, catches up with Rhi's solar disk, the last remaining gods visit the pyramids to take advantage of the short window of time while a path to other worlds is open. For a small moment, they have the opportunity to send their children to a world beyond our imagination so they don't have to die out. The shepherd dog had studied more characters on the walls and therefore listened only half-heartedly. But what he had overheard made him sit up and take notice. What? He asked. What do you mean by path to other worlds? But the man merely shrugged his shoulders, I only read what is written here, dear friend. You have to make up your own mind about it. I believe that the knowledge of the true meaning of this text was probably only granted to the one who wrote it down. And he or she must have been taken by Anubis himself a few generations ago. The shepherd dog thought aloud, When Apep, the snake, catches up with Rhi's solar disk. You mean a solar eclipse, right? When the light of the solar disk of the Great Rhi darkens, it is short-lived. After that, many solstices pass, many, many moons, until it happens again. And each time, the gods try again to find the way. They have been doing this for many generations, unfortunately unsuccessfully so far, the reader continued. Elioni stopped reading when the supposed dog god hastily stroked his hands over the reliefs of the hieroglyphs and explained the symbols aloud to himself. The pyramids. He exclaimed. Quiet, my friend, this is a temple, a holy place, the Arab admonished. You cannot find truth in the world unless you find silence in it. Puzzled, but without saying a word, Gejay stared at the man. His last saying, the one about the truth in silence, sounded very familiar to him. A dark-haired girl carrying a wooden figurine watched the talkers unnoticed and sneaked around. The only truth of this world is in its silence, I said to myself as I read. I looked up from the book in the direction of the shelf on which the first two parts of my book trilogy stood. The sentence I said to myself was found as a flap title on the cover of the first volume. Was it a coincidence that this Gajan pointed out to my protagonist that silence is necessary to be able to recognize and understand important things? It was amazing that he formulated this insight, although I always assumed that I could count it among my very own. Pondering, the dog soldier went over the story again in whispered words, pointing to the various hieroglyphics as if he were practicing vocabulary. Then Chenra stopped speaking, although his heart was beating fast. He looked at the grinning companion, who now nodded slowly and let the dog's gray cells do their work. The latter took a step back, away from the representations on the wall, and tried to look at the picture as a whole. Elioni gave him the torch, stood next to him and asked quietly, "You seem to have an epiphany, huh? Let me share in it. What do you see now, dog god?" He crossed his arms and saw from the side how the fire of the wood was reflected in the amber eyes of the companion. To the right and left, above and below, these wandered, again and again. The canine breath quickened and inner excitement made the dog's knees tremble. All this information, these riddles had a single origin, and likewise only one goal. A puzzle revealed itself. A system of characters. The way on a map. The way to the origin of the truth of everything. Elioni abruptly interrupted the silence when he said, "I think you're hallucinating already, Chenra. I'm going to go get us some water. Don't run away from me. I'll be right back. There's a cistern under the temple. It won't take long." The Tamrian took his drinking tube and looked at the male one more time. The latter was completely engrossed, which resulted in a shake of the earthling's head. Parts of the hieroglyphs blurred before the dog's eyes, while others became quite clear and stood out, illuminated by the light of the fire. They seemed to literally light up and began to move towards each other. New shapes, constellations and signs formed and joined together to form a story that the dog suddenly understood without ever having read this language before. At the same time, the dog's striking eyes shone and the eyelid lines surrounding them no longer seemed to be made of black fur, but shone like gold. This distinctive fur marking had its origin here, in this time. It was modeled after that of the god of Duat, conceived by an architect and created precisely for this moment of recognition. A man with foresight had already given Chenra Gejay's the story of his origin without the latter being able to suspect it. The one who had created a riddle could also be the solution for it. Suddenly it seemed to the Anthro as if he had always been here, in this land. He felt that more connected him to it than just the journey into the past. He could now understand the language of the people who whispered in this temple. Ancient Egyptian, at first completely unknown to him, but now understandable and clear, as if this was his original language, which he had only forgotten in the course of time. A new sensory impression came over the sovereign, because instinctively he detached various hieroglyphs from each other in his mind, took them apart and put them together again. In his mind's eye, scenes played out that were even further back than his own present moment. The story Elioni had told was not the whole truth. There was now another on the temple wall. As if he had cracked a code, another version of the events from distant times presented itself to the dog. Thousands of years ago, many anthropomorphic gods lived side by side with humans. They realized what man was going to do to his planet in the future and decided to flee. Moving to another world by airship was impossible for the Anthros. Although they already had higher technologies at their disposal, the world was not developed enough, so their only option was to rely on magic. They were looking for a way to find a planet not too far away where their species could continue to live without man. So they declared one of the Gajans as pharaoh, made him a god so that he could use countless workers to build a pyramid. How the path to other worlds could be trodden, what exactly was meant by it, was not written on this wall also after the new text. It only said that the pyramids could open it and make visible. For each eclipse, the Anthros had a single attempt, but always failed. However, the reason for this was also not mentioned in the signs. At every agreement of the remaining gods there were less of them, because the others eventually died and there were less and less different species of them. Stop! The sheepdog shouted to himself in his thoughts. Have been killed? What's that supposed to mean? He was sure he had read and translated correctly. A strange error in the text. Had no one noticed it? A shake of the head followed. The scripture also said that it was generally possible for female and male gods to produce offspring if they found any of the same kind. However, this became increasingly unlikely. Again and again, they built a new pyramid, higher and wider than the previous one. Apparently, one tried to come closer to the sky. What proximity served, however, remained a mystery to the Alsatian even when studying the statements. The respective pharaoh was the leader of the undertaking, a kind of priest and master of ceremonies. He was honorably buried in the pyramid he built, which was named after him. Even when the ceremony had once again become a failure, the hieroglyphs showed representations of different types of construction of pyramids. One failed attempt, it was exemplified here, was the buckling pyramid of Snofru. The connection to heaven could not be maintained because the shape of the structure was not correct. Nevertheless, the then ruler Tamaris was buried in it and set out again to build a larger, perfect structure of this kind. This is it. The way to the sky and the stars. Kama thought the male, when the moving images from the gray past had faded in his head after reading. The glow of his eyes and eyelids ended, as did the shimmering of the stone symbols and their parts. The blinking of the previously hypnotized eyes ended the trance Chenra had been in. Here, drink, dog god, a familiar voice suddenly spoke. I hope what you saw in your hallucinations was enlightening. Yes, the heat. Not so easy for someone with fur, I'm sure. This will cool you down. The dog was startled when the human handed him a hose to drink from. What did you say? Yeah, I guess you're right, Gajay stammered, thanked him curtly and put on the drinking vessel. Loudly, gulping air and water at the same time, he quickly emptied it and sighed softly, that feels good. Suddenly a belch escaped him and a loud burp echoed in the chamber. Quick as a flash, he grabbed his muzzle with his hand and covered it with embarrassment. The girl, who had been watching him read the symbols all this time, giggled gleefully and ran out of the temple with her arms waving. Phew, I'm sorry. He was still stuttering, but he now had the attention of the praying people, who had lit incense sticks and had also been in a trance earlier, all to himself. Whispers quickly spread, because after all, this uncouth behavior had completely ruined the quiet contemplation of those present. Elioni suggested that it was better to leave now, we had better not come back here today. The gods don't like it when you disturb their dialogue with the faithful. I told you that silence is very important. Gajay nodded and walked quickly out of the temple with his head down. Just arriving at the entrance, his human guide started laughing loudly. Well, you're a strange specimen of a god to me, you don't really look like one, you don't speak our language, and you don't know our customs. At first Chenra laughed too, but suddenly he didn't feel so good, his stomach was rumbling and he felt very sick. Before he could say a word, he sank to his knees and looked questioningly at Elioni. The latter, however, remained unimpressed and spoke softly, and you have never been to Tamari. Very strange. But we'll see who you really are and what you want here. All in good time, my friend. As passers-by watched in shock as the Kisar fell over and lay motionless in the sand, Elioni gave Egyptian commands to those present, which led to one taking a step back and letting the man, calmly, hoist his victim onto his camel. Chenra had already noticed from the size of Elioni's house that he could not be a commoner, but he could not have guessed that he was dealing with a devious guy who was deceiving him. As dawn broke, Gajay's came to and held his aching head. He straightened his upper body and realized that he was in a hut made of branches tied together in a makeshift manner. He was guarded by two soldiers and, though unclothed, was unharmed. Where was he? Ah, My Lord. Look. He is awake. The voice of the one who had incapacitated him provoked anger in the mind of the sovereign. What have you done to me? What is all this, Elioni? The soldiers, whom the dog recognized as Romans, turned to him and threatened with lances in his direction. His questioning look intensified when he saw Elioni and an elderly gentleman approaching him, very finely dressed and lavishly draped in jewelry of gold. The stranger wore an opulent headdress, silken shawls, and light cloth footwear. His appearance revealed that he must be a man of very high nobility. This was confirmed when Gejaz's former companion said submissively, "My minister, the gift for our esteemed God-king," and bowed reverently. "God-king?" the dog asked as they both stood in front of his cramped cage and the stranger eyed him extensively. "Indeed. A very unusual specimen. You have not exaggerated, my friend," the man then spoke, continuing to scrutinize. "He doesn't look like he has any kinship with Anpo. Either he's a deformity or belongs to a species I've never seen before. Amazing and strange at the same time." "What do you mean, minister? What are you going to do with me? What kind of game is this, Elioni? I thought we were friends and you wanted to help me," spoke the male. "Let him out," the nobleman ordered, which the soldiers promptly did. The moment the cage was opened, the shepherd jumped out and grabbed the traitor when he was rudely stopped by the Romans. "Jam satis est." "It is enough," shouted one, holding the prisoner's head in a headlock, while the other held the canine arms behind the prisoner's back and shouted "Canis stupidus." "Stupid dog. If I catch you, you traitor, I'll slash you." The dog snarled, but then, without a chance, silenced his opposition and let the humans have their say. "Hello, Chenregejes. They call me Potinos. I am the chief representative of the rightful pharaoh of Tamari," the Gajan greeted and held out his ring-tipped hand for a caress, which the addressed person did not do. Tensely he spoke, "Pharaoh? I think you mean Pharaoh. Cleopatra is the queen." Promptly, the cheeky male earned a slap from Elioni. Chenra's subsequent shock turned into renewed anger, because he would have loved to beat the cowardly Gajan on the spot. When he tried to give him another slap, the minister intervened and raised his hand. "You are brave, Chenregejes. Ptolemy's sister was his co-ruler for a time, but our soldiers drove her out some time ago. He is now sole ruler and the only God-king. He is rightful ruler and not this usurper bitch. Remember that. As you say, your highness. But if you say he's been ruling alone for some time, I'm guessing the fun won't be his for much longer." The Alsatian was familiar with the story of the child pharaoh and his sister. Ptolemy was not to reign long, for he would soon drown while bathing in the Nile. The dog was breathing heavily, so the nobleman let the soldiers loosen their grip. "What do you mean? Ah, do I have your curiosity now? If I didn't have to stand before you unclothed, I could certainly tell you something more about it. You will not believe it, but even gods know a sense of shame." A short moment passed, during which the pharaoh's representative thought and finally ordered that something be brought for the prisoner to wear. He also spoke, "Thank you for your service, Elioni. You may go. My slave will reward you for your efforts outside. You have once again proven your loyalty. Our God-king thanks you. Leave us now." The traitor bowed and took a few steps back before leaving the circle. "You're making common cause with the Romans? I thought you didn't like them? Traitor!" the Kesar shouted angrily after him. "If I could do as I pleased, I would kill you." The male dog was allowed to put on his clothes again, strictly observed, except for his breastplate. He did not find it. "Where is the protector? What are you going to do with it?" he asked, but he only got the answer from Potinos, "A strange piece. It seems to be made of the same stone as the dagger of Tutankhaten. Where did you get it? I have never seen such work. I think I will add the piece to my collection. I'm sure you won't mind." Chenra knew that Tutankhaten meant the pharaoh Tutankhamun, whose dagger was supposed to have been made of meteorite rock and to have been filled with a mysterious power. The idea that the protector, which was sacred to the Alsatians, could have been made of this very material and thus come from Earth, secretly fascinated the dog. But if this was true, who had brought the armor from that time to Alpha? Vol? The dog clenched his teeth and said, "I do mind if you keep him. I can tell you that he won't like that either. You'll see." Sit down, Potinos offered, gesturing to a gold-trimmed chair across from him at a noble table. The Roman soldiers flanked the dog, who sat down and still had anger in his belly. But he could not do anything further, not assault. You seem to be right. What is amazing is that none of my subordinates can put on this armor. They all suddenly writhe in pain and die. You, however, are not like that. Is this armor only for gods? That may be, what do I know? The dog waved off annoyed. Why did they let me be kidnapped? What's the fuss about? He added crossly, but he was interrupted by the calm voice of Potinos. Well, you are here because the god king learned of your visit to Elione. And as instructed my servant, he reported your appearance immediately. He was instructed to bring you here so that I, representing our pharaoh, might speak to you. And what for? I thought Elione was on Cleopatra's side, not Ptolemy's. Ha! Laughed the Gajan. This ruse is also part of his assignment whenever he encounters one of you. As always, he has carried it out to my satisfaction. Even though you probably couldn't rely on him, Pharaoh, the true god, can. A rage-filled, loud breathing with gnashing canine teeth followed, and low growls escaped the prisoner. The faithful Elione always sings the song of the one who feeds him. All people who want to avoid trouble do that. But tell me, have you met another god so far? The bearded nobleman only replied. The Kisar did some quick soul-searching, he hadn't run across any other anthro. If this was a time when they still lived on Gaja, why hadn't he seen any of them at the market in Yenebayan? Were there really so few of them left that they were a rarity? Noticing the dog's pondering, the minister finally answered the question himself, of course, you haven't met any of them. How could you? Pharaoh does not want any other gods beside himself. I don't know if we have found them all, but we will. That, too, is only a matter of time. What do you mean? Asked Chenra, startled, but he was not to get an easy answer. If you can bleed, you can die. And that's exactly what Pharaoh wants, for all of you to die. Seize him! The minister shouted, and before his counterpart could react, the Romans grabbed him by the upper arms. The dog tried to break free as more soldiers entered the room, pointed their weapons, and the dignitary walked between them, exiting the building. Gajas paused for a moment, counted, and then spoke to himself, 5 against 1? Oh, come on! Immediately a soldier thrust with his lance, but missed the Kisar, as he made a leap and landed by rolling backwards on the shoulders of those holding him. One of them was pierced by the thorn, so he let go of the prisoner and went down. Then so be it, Alea Yakta est. The die is cast, the Alsatian spoke, snatched the spear from an adversary, and with it struck 2 more men into the afterlife. Their blood splattered on the nobleman's furniture, which Chenra threw at 2 more people. They shouted quid hic agitur? Because they didn't know what was going on and just burst into the scene. Quickly, the male grabbed the second to last of the remaining earthlings, put him in a headlock, and threatened, if you don't bring me back my protector, your friend here dies. He bared his teeth and panted, will it be soon? When his opponent tried to take a quick step forward, Gajas tightened his grip and growled, don't you dare. I swear by all your gods, I'll kill him. The clasped one shouted hoarsely, Capto. Sito. No, my dear. He won't grab me quickly anyway. One wrong move and you'll both find yourselves with your Anubis in the next moment. For a moment the opponents stood tensely facing each other and beads of sweat ran down the pale skin of the gaunt human warrior. But then he sighed, put down his sword and lance, and made a hand gesture punctuated with the word Veni, signaling the hostage taker to come along. With slightly raised arms, the Roman walked ahead. The Kisar followed him into an adjoining room, where he could see his protector lying on a presentation pedestal next to a shimmering bluish dagger. When they got close enough to the paraphernalia, the male kicked his captive's leg away, causing him to yelp, fall on his back, and then have his arm pinned to the ground by the dog's hind leg. The forerunner startled, looking puzzled, with an aggressive, demanding gesture instructing him to hand his armor to the dog god. Under the whimpering of his crony, he did as he was told and first handed over the dagger to the sovereign, which had to be that of Tutankhaten. When the superior took it and took it out of its leather scabbard, he was amazed to discover what he had not noticed before, his massive armor, made of the same stone, shimmered in the same blue color as the blade that now completed his appearance. Also, the shepherd now understood, if the protector was indestructible, so must be this dagger. "What a beautiful piece," he praised. After he sheathed the weapon but did not put it back, Chenra smiled smugly and spoke, "Gratias." Frightened, his counterpart nodded, whereupon he stabbed Pharaoh's dagger into his throat with lightning speed. Unprepared, the man could not escape his fate, tore open his eyes and gasped. When he fell over, the dog grabbed the other Gajan's arm, rudely helped him get to his feet, and bit the side of his neck with his strong, shiny teeth. A soft attempt to scream escaped the man and the anthro suddenly felt more animalistic, wilder. He no longer resembled a human being, but resembled an animal that had to defend itself because it had been forcibly cornered. His growl sounded almost like that of a wolf and his breath quivered. The amber eyes now shone brighter than usual and their owner felt more power flowing through his muscles. It had to be related to this dagger. Maybe it was also the combination of the blade and chest protector? Since the dog had ensured that these two parts had found each other, was it their purpose? As Chenra let go of the bitten man, his breathing calmed and his growling ended. He thought about what a place of myths and mysteries this land was, although there were also some things and circumstances on Alpha Vol, which one, despite a far development, could not explain. There must have been these things on Gaja that likewise strengthened in a very tight epic, he did not suspect. I looked down, impressed, at the lines that were just emerging on the blank pages of the book. "Impressive, my friend," I said softly. "An interesting path struck my dog, my son, there. And I, as the one who gave him these liberties, was proud to learn something about the history of the earth and also of his world through it. Something told me that the realization about the fact that the armor item I had thought up had its origin in ancient Egypt would not be the last one my protagonist would give me. I already knew it was not the most significant and greatest, thinking back to his experiences with Esmera." Chenra now also left the den. Where the minister had gone, what he wanted to achieve with the death of the dog, these things did not matter to the sovereign. After all, he had now regained his protector and, on top of that, had made spoils. Now he was in possession of a very powerful ancient dagger, which had already been held by a famous pharaoh and which clearly belonged to his breastplate. Time was pressing and there was no room for revenge, neither on the nobleman nor on Elione. The latter would deserve no better, but he would have to be found first, after all, which was too much trouble for the shepherd. There were more important things to do first, because he was not yet one step closer to his goal. Punishment could take place, if he met one of them by chance again. After internalizing the hieroglyphics, Chenra knew there had to be a way to stop what had happened, or what had not yet happened. The pyramids of Giza were the key, but he wondered, where in Tamari was he and where were these structures? Not even a compass direction was known to the dog. In the time from which he came, there were aids. But here everything was different. Coming from a modern society, he had no idea how to refer to stars for navigation. Yes, it was shown again that in the course of time, a lot of knowledge was lost. The Alsatian walked thoughtfully along a narrow path. It had become dusk, and some inhabitants dismantled their stalls. "A very nice evening, isn't it, sir?" said the thin voice of a man crouching by the wayside. "What? How?" The male was startled for a moment and did not immediately recognize the earthling, as he was reluctant to get up for a conversation. At first Chenra wanted to tell him something about manners, that it was impolite to address someone out of the blue and not stand up. But he quickly realized that the Arab was missing his legs. "Oh, hello," he then greeted, "what were you saying?" "I meant that it was a very nice evening. And I wonder if you might have something edible left for an old cripple sitting here before you, dear sir. You see, I would earn my own bread, but I cannot. Show mercy, please." Embarrassed, the sovereign lowered his head and had to admit that he was also hungry, but had nothing edible himself. "I'm really sorry. But wait a minute. I'll get you something," he promised and ran back to the shelter where he had just fought the Romans. He did not worry that they would be looking for him, on the contrary, he noticed the silence that had stretched like a deceptive net over the scenery in this place. Pushing away the dead mounds of flesh with his paw, the fugitive took a couple of golden goblets and some fruit that had been laid out ready. These things would no longer be needed by those present here anyway, and their owner, the minister, would surely have enough of this junk. Briskly, Chenra ran back to the beggar and handed him the stolen fruit. Here, take it, he said, you need it more than he who took it from the people. It may not be bread, but it will help you through the night. The beggar's eyes widened, and he beamed. When Gejaz also handed him the goblets and said that he could sell them to passers-by and thus make food, he could no longer contain his joy. But my lord, surely you have not taken these things from anyone and they belong to you? Yes, lied Gejaz, they are mine. I am a god. And as you know, I can take whatever I want, right? Oh, forgive me, dear God. You are right. How could I have the audacity? The earthling bowed his head submissively, even though he correctly suspected that this was stolen goods. But that was all the same to him. Already tomorrow he would move the goods and would have nothing more to do with it. It's okay, take and eat, his counterpart then ordered. I'll stay a moment so I can make sure no one robs you while you eat. Thank you, thank you. Thank you very much, noble lord. How can I ever repay you? You are the first man to pay attention to me in these times. Tell me what I can do, and I will help you. Whatever it is. I may not be able to walk or fight, but I have accumulated much wisdom in my life. Ask for anything you want to know. The dog soldier squatted down to him and sighed, well, maybe you can really help me. I'm not from here and I don't know where I am. I want to visit the pyramids in Giza and I don't know which way to go now. Is it far to them? Oh, indeed I can help you there, my lord, spoke the legless one. So you want to participate in the ceremony of the gods, do you? The male remembered the meaning of the symbols on the temple wall. That's right, he nodded, at which point the interviewee hastily took a bite of a fruit and began to smack his lips. Still with his mouth full, he spoke, it is not easy to get there. It is far. Very, very far. However, you got so far off course, it will be an arduous journey, that's for sure. He eyed the male and added that he seemed to be someone who was not afraid of anything. He continued, so you also want to scatter your seed, eh? At least you should, because the child Pharaoh is not very merciful and there are not many of your kind left. Like his ancestor, he hates the gods. The wonderful statue of Anpo. They have disfigured it. Which statue do you mean? The Skizbanch, the image of life. They now say Sphinx, to it. A few generations ago, it is said to have been an image of the Anpo that guarded the pyramids of Giza. Ptolemy's ancestor had his own face chiseled in place of the jackal's head. But then his nose fell off. Oh, I can tell you, heads have rolled then. Serves the wannabe's family right, though. Impressed, Chenra and I, who had been quietly reading on, simultaneously pronounced, okay. Wow. Again, the dog had managed to give me some first-hand history lessons. Although it was not proven that what the beggar from the past was talking about was really true, it was an interesting theory. I raised my head, looked thoughtfully and imagined how it must have looked when a huge Anubis figure was scaffolded, hundreds of people were filing away at it and suddenly a mishap happened and the big nose throbbed on the desert sand. As for the dimensions of the Sphinx of today, it could be right, Egyptians were not so careless about proportions. So why should they have created such a shapeless figure, whose torso was much too long compared to its head? Why an animal with a human head, when they usually depicted people with animal heads? Yes, something was really wrong. I continued reading, eating some fruit as well. What do you mean by scattering seeds? Don't you know how the ceremony works? Then what are you doing there? You are a god, are you not? Only the gods, pharaohs and their entourage are allowed to enter this place. They do it to secure their descendants. How come you don't know about this? Who are you really, dog god? Are you even from Tamari? The old man looked skeptical. Chenra, who still wanted to avoid revealing his true identity, searched for suitable words. He laughed in a put-upon way, yeah, you know, I've helped a couple of Tamrians embalm corpses. Things that dog gods do. I tripped and must have hit my head really hard. I really forgot what I was trying to do, you know. The man, still looking incredulous, elaborated, very well, dear sir. Who am I to judge whether it is not advisable to believe your words, those of a god? The Alsatian realized that he could play the card of being a god very usefully. Thanks to the faith of the inhabitants of this land, he could do whatever he wanted. Most of them would not ask long questions, however implausible his stories and explanations might seem. "Tell me," spoke Gejaz, "why your minister is not then so wise as to travel to the pyramid and simply murder all the gods in one fell swoop. If you know about where the ceremony will take place, then surely he knows too, doesn't he?" The old man confirmed, "Of course he knows about it, yes. But since he is not a pharaoh, he cannot enter the holy places. And Ptolemy is much too young. On the day of the ceremony, only those directly involved in it are allowed to enter the structure. At least that is how it is handed down. Potinos also has respect for the writings of the ancestors and does not want to put himself in danger. He may lack any respect for the gods, but the little pharaoh still holds very dear the ancient rites. Anyone who disturbs the sacred gathering is cursed and shall die a cruel death, oh yes." The male sighed and rebuffed, "Will be something if you say so." The man continued to speak, pointing along the path with his hand, "Go in this direction, all night long. Follow the three stars aligned above you as soon as it is dark enough. After a while you will reach a hill where there is an old withered tree. Then turn to the right and walk straight ahead. You will come to a dried up riverbed. If I'm right, you should then come across the nomad tents of two wise men. The ones who live in them are outcasts. They have turned their backs on the community. Since they travel around Tamari, they should be able to guide you to the pyramids and tell you more precisely how the ceremony will take place in a few days." The sheepdog mused, "Not that I don't appreciate your help, old man, but why can't you tell me directly the full way to the pyramids?" But the person addressed laughed softly, a piece of fruit falling out of his mouth through the gaps in his teeth, "Is that a question? You should know that, as I said, we mortals are not allowed to even come close to the sacred tombs, let alone know what exactly happens during the ceremony. The nomads I spoke of are not outcasts for nothing, if you understand." "No," the questioner shook his head, "I'm afraid I don't understand." "Trust me, noble lord. Stick to what I said. Then you will find what you are looking for. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you how to reach the tombs, but at least who knows about them? A large part of the way you know now. For the rest, you will need further help." Puzzled, the Alsatian inquired, "Didn't you tell me you were going to describe the way there?" "Knowledge and wisdom are subject to limits, my god." It was clear to the dog that he could not expect a clearer answer. So he sighed again and decided not to lose any more time. "I'd better be on my way, then," he spoke, as his advisor hurriedly made the gold goblets disappear under his cloak and nodded. Wishing him a good journey and bowing respectfully again, Chenra also bowed his head in thanks and started his way through the darkness and loneliness of the Tamari Desert. He walked briskly and without addressing anyone. He still had to fear that they would look for him because of the fight with the Romans. Thanks to the lack of sunlight, the dog could wander without the risk of being stopped or dying of thirst. While he waded quickly through the night, he contemplated the surroundings, how quiet it was here, desolate and lonely. However, there was a truth hidden here that he was about to realize. This land was in upheaval, for several peoples occupied it simultaneously, and only many years later would it be clear what its identity was. It would no longer be called Kemet, the Black Land, Tadesheret, the Red Land, or Tamari, the Beloved Land. There would be neither pharaohs nor anthros. They all did not know it, only he, the dog from the distant future. Orion's Belt, Gejaz thought to himself as he looked toward the sky and recognized the prominent constellation of stars above him. He knew he was on the right path, only this desert seemed so endless to him, the path so dreary. Step by step, only darkness, emptiness and silence greeted him. After some time of dull straight running, the sun slowly rose again on the horizon, coloring the powdery sand a dark orange. "I would love to stay here. It's so beautiful, quiet and peaceful," the sovereign said quietly to himself, thinking about what it would be like to abandon his plans, settle in Tamari and spend a life of seclusion. After all, he thought, all the things on Afaval had not happened at the time now, and maybe they would not. He would grow old and die in this country, on the planet Gaja. Friendships would help against the desolation. Whereby, as a supposed god, he would always have to fear for his life and besides, he did not want to undo his friends as if they had never existed. The kingdoms of Aramaria, Samogitia and Alsatianaya were not bad in themselves, and his friends deserved to live. But they also deserved to do it in peace and without war. The way that remained was to return to Alpha Vol, but at the time when Aram and Aria began to exist. Perhaps a small intervention of Chenro was enough and Banato would not go mad, would not rape his mother, would not kill Aram. That, he imagined, should be doable. Banato would simply not be allowed to sleep that night that set such ominous things in motion. But why, and he continued to ask himself this question, had the Ispasetka guided him not to a past on Alpha Vol, but on Gaja? The name of the stone was translated as the word point of origin. Apparently, there was no alternative for the outcome of the time travel, because the beginning of every anthropomorphic life of Alpha Vol was here on Earth. His eyes threatened to fall shut when, after a simple blink, all of a sudden, he found himself standing in front of an old, withered tree, the very one the beggar had spoken of. Phew! He cringed, what kind of magic is that? Where did that come from all of a sudden? Did I fall asleep? In order to do everything correctly, to strictly follow the instructions received, the dog aligned himself with the sun and the stump and then turned its body 90 degrees to the right. What happened now could only be some kind of magic. Just at the moment of his turning, the surroundings seemed to change and on the bare, red-lit dunes suddenly appeared bushes, boulders and skeletons of dead animals. Astonished, the dog thought, that's completely impossible. Am I dreaming? How can this be? To cross-check, he turned back again and the surroundings turned completely to sand again. Fascinated by this, he repeated the rotation a few times until he understood that this must be a magical place, miraculously, one transported to another place in Tamari. Where he was now, how much further it would be, Gajez did not know. But it was clear that the beggar wanted him to do exactly what he was doing. How did the man know about this anomaly? After his last turn, the dog ran over the sand hills and spotted the bed of a dried-up river some distance away. Just as you said, beggar? He rejoiced. However, that's possible, but that's the way to go.